Happy Monday, guys. I have a wonderful author interview for you. Jillian Bohm joins me to talk about her sophomore novel, The Stolen Kingdom. This is a really great interview, and Jillian tells us a lot about her super long journey to being published, and I think it's a good reminder. It helped remind me, too, that, you know, like, publishing's really slow, but also there's lots of rejection even after you get an agent, which might be a hard pill to swallow, but is a good thing for us to know. And she shares some really great querying tips, tells us a little bit about who some of her favorite authors are and what she likes to do when she isn't writing. So let's go ahead and get to know Jillian. Jillian, can you tell me about your sophomore novel, right? The Stolen Kingdom.
Yes, The Stolen Kingdom is about Marilith, a vintner's daughter, who has no idea her hidden magical power is proof of a secret bloodline and claim to the throne. And Alec, who is the king's second son, and he hates the dark stolen magic that comes with the throne he hopes never to inherit. Marilith is coerced into a plot to murder the royal family and seize the throne. But when she meets Alec and learns more about the stolen magic, things become more complicated.
As always, right? That complication that arises.
There would be no story without the complications.
Yes. Oh, well, awesome. I mean, that sounds so exciting. And I'm sure it's like a dream to have your sophomore novel come out into the world, right? Tell me a little bit about your journey to this point, to having two published books.
My journey was incredibly long. a never-ending journey. I actually self-published a nonfiction book back in, I think it was 2003. It was called My Lima Beans Are Allergic to My Spoon, and it was a collection of humorous anecdotes for stay-at-home and work-at-home moms. And so after that, I decided to try my hand at writing some fiction, and I started writing my first novel in 2004. And it took me 5 years to land an agent, which felt like a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
I was with him for 5 years. He took a total of 4 different novels out on submission.
Wow.
But none of them sold.
Wow.
And so with each subsequent failure, it started to feel more like, this is never going to happen for me, right?
Yeah.
So after 5 years with him, I signed with my current agent, Danielle Burby. It took her 2 years to sell Stormrise, which was my debut novel. Mm-hmm. That one came out in 2019. When she sold Stormrise, Tor Teen actually signed me for 2 books, which was very thrilling.
Yeah.
Stormrise and then the dreaded YA Untitled, which is just a scary thing when somebody buys a book that you don't even know what it's going to be yet.
Right.
So that ended up being The Stolen Kingdom. So I'm super excited to finally be here.
That's amazing. And yeah, definitely a long journey. I feel like it's not talked enough about, or hasn't been recently, like all the times that you go on sub and things don't sell, right? Like, I feel like that happens to a lot more authors than we really know about. So yeah, to have 4 novels go on sub and not sell was probably like so difficult each time, right? That rejection.
It really was. And all during this time, I was also hosting my writer's blog, Miss Snark's First Victim. And so we had a lot of contests with agents on that blog. And so many of my readers ended up signing agents through the contests and then went on to publish. And I sat there feeling like the quintessential always a bridesmaid, never a bride kind of person. So, and for as exciting as it was to see these people moving forward, you know, it's hard to sit in your corner and wonder, when's my turn, right?
Definitely.
So sometimes it was pretty hard. But overall, now that it's over, I'm thankful for my journey because I learned so much along the way. So
definitely.
It's all good.
Yes. I feel like, you know, you learned as a person, right? But I'm sure as a writer too, and an author, so much from each of those novels as
absolutely
as you did it. Well,
so true.
That's, you know, good for you for persevering and making it through that.
Thank you. Talk to my husband. I don't know. It was pretty ugly sometimes, I think.
Well, good for him too for sticking through it all, because I'm sure it was difficult.
Yes, it was.
Well, tell me a little bit about querying. You know, you've signed with two different agents, so, you know, I imagine you've had some good experience querying. And then, like, maybe your top tips for writers who are in the querying trenches right now.
Sure. Well, when I first started querying, the whole concept of an e-query was brand new. So my first attempts to get an agent were all done, believe it or not, through snail mail.
Ooh.
And I actually have in one of my bedside drawers a stack of rejection letters in envelopes tied with a red ribbon. So that's how old I am. It was a very time-consuming process back then compared to now. But during that time, Kristen Nelson of Nelson Literary Agency was one of the agents out there blogging for writers to learn things. And I just hung on her every word. And one of the things that she provided for us was a list of agents who were beginning to accept e-queries.
Mm.
I was really excited about that. So that's where I began to really get into just the whole online querying thing, which is so much easier. Now, you still have to write a really strong query letter. It doesn't matter if it's going to go on a piece of paper or in an email. So there was still that. But the actual process was so much faster and easier. So I'm so thankful for Kristen in those early days of e-queries. And what's really interesting now is that my agent, Danielle Burby, is with Kristen Nelson's agency. So that's kind of a really neat full circle story.
That is.
Yeah. So it was obviously a very long process. I kept careful records of my queries, so I remembered who I had sent what to. It gets pretty convoluted after a while, for sure. And I finally landed my first agent through a query. But what's interesting is after 5 years with him, I was wanting to move toward the YA fantasy writing, which is not where I started. And he didn't really represent that. But Danielle at the time worked for him, and I made the suggestion, well, what if I just kind of move over to Danielle? So that's how it happened. So that was easy. I did not have to query her. We already had a working relationship. So that was a little bit of a cheat.
That is nice that you, I feel like though after four novels on sub that didn't sell, you deserved a cheat at that point, right?
Well, thank you. It kind of felt that way. I'll take that.
Yes, I think that was perfectly fine to do.
Absolutely. Well, it's worked out really well. She's an amazing agent. We have a great relationship, and I'm so thankful for her.
Good.
She's wonderfully editorial as well. And that brings me to giving some tips like you had asked for.
Yes.
One of the things you need to know when you're going into your agent search is what kind of agent you really want, because there are some agents who are very hands-on and editorial, and there are also agents who are not. For me, I like having an editorial agent, and Danielle is very gifted editorially. So for me, she's a perfect fit. You may not want that, and a lot of times that's not hard to find out when you're doing your research.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to know what you want. It's also important to know what the agents are repping, because nothing's more time wasting for an agent but then to get queries for things they're not even remotely interested in. So you don't want to be that author who looks like she hasn't done any homework. So you definitely want to do your homework, and you definitely, while you do want to get some feedbacks from some, maybe some trusted writer friends before you send that letter out, I'm really not a fan of what I would call the overshopped query letter.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, people will post things on forums and, hey, give me some feedback. You might get a dozen different people ripping that thing to shreds. By the time they're done, it doesn't have your voice anymore. So, and most of those people probably didn't even read your story. They're just critiquing it on a surface level of, is this a strong query? So I would advise against that. I think it's well-meaning, but it's not going to ultimately give you a query that's representative of who you are and what your writing is about. So that's a big piece of advice I like to give to aspiring authors. And also, if you go to my website at jillianbohm.com, you can download an ebook that I wrote a number of years ago called Agent Demystified.
Ooh.
And it's free, and it's got a lot of great information in there. And my whole goal in writing that little ebook was to take away that kind of scary aura that seemed, you know, we're kind of afraid in some ways of agents. And my whole point of writing that book was to take away that scary edge and just get out there and do your thing and get an agent. So that's a free resource that I would like to offer to all aspiring authors out there.
I love that resource, and I love that idea too. That's what I love most about the agent podcast interviews I do, is that, like, demystifying them as magical creatures who just want to ruin our lives,
yes,
right? Like, they are
absolutely
real people. They're real people, and they love books, and it's, you know, just there's so much more to it than just them rejecting you through email.
It's so true. And your podcasts are a great way to do that, too, because you can actually hear their voices.
Yes.
And oh my gosh, they laugh sometimes, you know, it's just wonderful. So I'm glad you're doing that. That's a good service.
Yes. I do love your tip about the overshopped query. I think that that advice rings true even for your own writing too. Like, maybe don't have 50 beta readers who are all giving you different advice about your novel, but same thing for your query. Maybe stick with a few trusted critique partners and shop it through them.
Yes.
But sometimes, you know, the hardest part of query writing is just realizing that you're going to have to take some space from it, come back, you know, over and over again until you make sure you get it right. And that I think we all want to get querying over with and, like, just be done with it as fast as possible. But
it's like a dentist appointment, right?
Yes. Like, let's just get it done with. But I feel like you do have to give it some time, which is the hardest part of it.
It is so hard. But, yep, that's absolutely true. It takes a lot of time.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for sharing those tips. My next question is about The Stolen Kingdom. I'd love to know what's something you hope readers will take away from this novel.
Yeah, it's funny that questions like this are so hard. And I think it might be because when you're writing a story, you're not really thinking about what readers are taking away. You're just writing the story, you know. But when I reflect upon it, I think that there's a real underlying theme of forgiveness in the story. It's not a prominent theme, but it's an important theme in the story. And I think that ultimately, the story wouldn't work without forgiveness between characters. So that might be subtle, but I would hope that when readers close the book afterwards, they might say, oh, yeah, wow, forgiveness, that's cool. So
I love that.
I don't know. Like I said, that might be too subtle, and someone might read it and say, what is she even talking about? But that's okay, too.
I love that. I think we need more forgiveness in this world, right?
I think we really do.
And practice at it. So I think that's a good thing to hope people take away from your story.
Well, thank you.
My next question, Jillian, I'd love to know who some of your favorite authors are and a little bit about why you love them.
Oh, what a fun thing to talk about. My favorite author of all time is Jane Austen.
So good.
Always has been, yeah. I love her dry wit. I love the way she talks about her society, kind of tongue-in-cheek, and without being overt, and you still fall in love or in hate with the characters.
Yes.
So for me, that's just timeless, and I'll always go back to her. Speaking more contemporary authors, right now I'm really in love with Rae Carson, young adult fantasy with such lush world building and memorable characters. I really enjoy Leigh Bardugo. I think she has an incredible gift for giving a distinct voice to each point of view character. And of course, her world building is fantastic too. And also, I would be remiss not to mention my own daughter, who is also a writer. She's not published yet, but she and I actually have the same agent, which is very cool. And she is one of my favorite writers. I absolutely love her voice and her style. Her characters are incredibly believable, and I'm so excited for her to eventually break in and so that everybody else can read her stories too. So her name's Maggie Boehm, and I'm just waiting for her day in the sun.
Oh, that is the sweetest ever. That'll be so fun. You guys should write, you should write something together too.
We've talked about it. We really have.
Yeah. That would be so fun. My next question is about when you started writing, like when you fell in love with it. Were you a young writer? Was it later in life, somewhere in between?
I started writing very young. I have my earliest memories of writing things when I was only 6.
Wow.
And I wrote all through school and high school, did the creative writing thing, all that stuff. But then I ended up majoring in music in college because music is my other passion. And so writing kind of took a back seat. And I didn't get back to it until I was in my 30s. So I think that as far as from a publishing standpoint, I'm more of a late bloomer.
Yeah.
But even though I've been writing pretty much all my life, it didn't really come into focus for me until later. So definitely more of a late bloomer. And I know this sounds really cliche, but if you are an older writer or somebody who is older, by older, I mean you're out of your 20s, okay? Publishing's a very young-looking industry.
Yes.
So if you're out of your 20s and you haven't started yet and you really want to, it is absolutely never too late to write.
Yes.
You can't let yourself be defined by an industry that has an externally young vibe. Because it's actually not true. There are authors out there of all ages. So just sit down and start writing. It just doesn't matter how old you are.
Yes, definitely. I was very much a young writer, and I had this dream of being a published author as a teenager, like being a teenage published author. And then when I didn't make that goal, I was like, my life is over. I'm never going to get this. Never going to have this happen. But yeah,
you are so not alone. I mean, that honestly happens to people.
Yeah,
so
it does.
I want to be that older voice of, no, you can really do this. Don't listen.
Exactly. I do think, you know, we give ourselves sometimes these like self-imposed deadlines, and it's like, no, you have so much time to accomplish this goal that sometimes takes a really long time. I mean, you were with your first agent for 5 years, 4 novels on sub, you know, you weren't planning for that. And you know, I think too that it brings up something I always like to remind people is like, I feel like we think that once you get an agent, like you've made it, it's all uphill from there, right? But that's right. That's not always the case too, right? Well, it sounds like you've genre hopped a little bit. When you were with your first agent, you weren't writing YA fantasy. So you've kind of already genre hopped. But what other genres would you like to try writing?
Well, what I started out with was pretty much dystopian.
Ooh, fun.
And I love it. And I know that it's very glutted still. And it's funny because when I first started writing the novel that eventually did land me my first agent, which is a dystopian young adult novel, I had no idea what Hunger Games even was. I hadn't heard of it yet. And then by the time I was ready to actually query this thing, I'm like, oh, this is like that. And of course, there was no place in the market for any debut dystopian at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to move on from there. I did some science fiction, straight up science fiction, which I'd also love to get back to. But if I were truly brave, I would try my hand at historical fiction.
Ooh.
I know, particularly my favorite time period is the Tudor era in England.
Yes.
And I love reading that kind of story, but the amount of research is insurmountable. And so I much. So admire authors who write good historical fiction. So that's a kind of a dream baby of mine, but I don't know if I can see myself actually doing it. But like I just said, it's never too late, right? So who knows?
Yes. I think for me, I love reading historical fiction, but it might take some of the fun out of it for me if I had to do all that research, you know?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. I know.
So I feel you on that one. It would be fun to write, but I'm like, maybe not so much on that.
No, because, I mean, I've heard it can take equal parts research and writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the writing itself is already very time consuming, so it's a big commitment to write historical fiction, so.
Yes.
But at least maybe we should just read it and let other people write it.
Yes, we will celebrate other people's research time by just loving their books. Yeah. Me too. I think it's so funny that your comment about dystopian and when all that came out. Isn't it funny how writers, we all seem to like get on the same wavelength about stories. And yes. they all come out at the same time. Like, all these people had the same stories. It's so funny, because I love dystopian. And the first novel the second one I ever finished was a dystopian. And then when I started to query it, it was like, oh, this is, you know, the market's too saturated with it. And it's like, but people will still love it. People still do today, I mean, love those stories. Do. It's just so funny how that works.
Some writer wavelength.
Yes. my next question is about publishing advice. What is the worst writing or publishing advice anyone has ever given you?
That is such a hard question that I actually don't have an answer because I've gotten so much good advice.
That's good.
There's just so many people I could thank along the way. Way back from the very first reader who read my very first novel explain to me what point of view meant. I was head hopping, didn't know what that was, didn't know I was doing it. And he said, you know, when you make this person talk, you know, we really don't know what he's thinking. And I'm like, oh, you're right. So, just, you know, just a whole bunch of, a whole series of things like that. And I can honestly say that nobody along the way led me in the wrong direction.
I love that. That's good to hear, right?
Really, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, you want to try to dredge up some ridiculous or horrifying story because it makes for good storytelling, right? Oh, surely I can think of something. Honestly, every time I thought of something, it was something positive. So I guess that's a lot to be thankful for, isn't it?
That is so much to be thankful for. How wonderful that nobody, you know, said something to you that hard, like, made your spirits go down or led you in a wrong direction. That's good.
Yeah, I'm awesome. Very thankful for that.
Yes, wonderful. And yes, kudos and so many thanks to those writer friends or readers who give us that advice that, you know, we didn't know we needed. Like, oh, you're head hopping. Like, oh, I didn't even know that was a thing, but thank you.
Oh my gosh. You know, I still thank him for that to this day. Mm-hmm. So it's just all the little things, because there's so much you really, really don't know, and it's okay not to know.
Yep.
You just have to ask, and sometimes you don't ask. It's just that people read your stuff and say, oh, this is a mess. Can I help you? So it takes a lot of courage, too, and I think sometimes aspiring authors need to be reminded that it does take courage.
Yeah.
It isn't easy to hear bad things about our writing. And bad is probably not a good word choice, because it just, all it means is that it needs to be improved or fixed or changed.
Yeah.
And if we're willing to do that, then we're just going to keep growing and growing. And that's what it's all about. So
that is having that mindset of even though, yes, it might hurt to hear some of those things, right? Because that's just how it is with your book that you've spent so much time on. Sometimes it hurts, but you got to work through it and realize, like, oh, okay, here's where I go from here. There's always something we can do to make it better.
Yep, and it feels good once we get there.
Oh, yes. When you're like, oh, look, I took this feedback, and now my story is so much better than before.
And I don't need quite as much chocolate as I thought I did.
Yes. Yes. Well, my next question, I'd love to know what's something you like to do when you're not writing, and besides reading, because I'm sure you love to read.
I know. I mean, what writer wouldn't say reading,
right?
Well, like I said earlier, I am a musician.
Oh, yeah.
I have my degree of a Bachelor of Music degree. So I originally was going to teach. I did teach elementary music in a public school for a year shortly after I was married. But ultimately wasn't what I really wanted to do. I have sung with the Nashville Symphony Chorus for the last 5 years.
So cool.
Of course, that's all shut down now. So that's been a pretty serious loss.
Yeah.
In my life. But prior to that, it was the most amazing, fulfilling musical experience I've ever had.
I bet.
The Nashville Symphony Orchestra has really come a long way since its inception, and they are a Grammy award-winning orchestra. So to sing classical pieces of music with them in the beautiful hall here in Nashville was just profoundly wonderful. I mean, I can't gush about it enough. So prior to everything shutting down, that was a huge part of my life for the last 5 years. I'm also a pianist, so I enjoy playing the piano. I enjoy giving my nephew piano lessons. Mm. That's very fun. And I also love to scrapbook. So I'm not a very crafty person at all. Like, seriously, I'm the mom who does not want glitter in her house because it's a mess.
You know? I can't stand glitter.
So, thank you.
Yeah,
I
no.
mean, glitter is just from the devil. Mm-hmm. So, it's not my happy place. But scrapbooking is different because it's photographs and
yeah.
and pictures are a huge love of my life. So, I'm way behind technically. I'm still in 2006, but I started, my first scrapbook is from 1988, so I have done a lot over the years, but it's a lot of work catching up, and I don't always stay consistent to it, and if I'm busy drafting a new story like I am right now, then I absolutely don't have time for my scrapbooking, but that's my one kind of dipping my little pinky toe into the crafty arena where I don't really belong. So
I love scrapbooking. I think it's so
you
fun.
Do?
I do. And I love to watch my kids go through it and look at all these old pictures and they're like they can sit there forever and go through them over and over and be like, I remember this and I remember that, and that's just the best. I think that's
isn't that wonderful?
So sweet. Yeah.
See, and my youngest is 13 and I haven't gotten to her yet. And so I'm like just about ready to be pregnant in my photo album. And you know, over the years she said to me, "Mommy, are we getting to me soon?" Yes, I promise I do have pictures of you and you will see them one day. So.
That is so funny. It'll be a special day when she sees herself in a scrapbook.
Yes, it will. Yes, I'll say, "Molly, you really do exist, honey. Here's
right.
the proof."
Here we go. We didn't forget to take pictures of you.
No, we did not.
I love it. And I love, you know, I think hopefully at some point you get to go back to doing, you know, you're singing with that orchestra because that sounds incredible and like such a, you know, special experience. And I love music. I'm not very musically inclined, but there's just so much that you get from music and it's so fulfilling and relaxing and, you know, can
it really is.
I mean, it's like the storytelling of it too, right? It's just wonderful.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a really deep level. I mean, music just kind of crawls under your skin.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just, I can't imagine a world without music. So, you know, you don't have to be some kind of trained musician to just know that and experience that. So
definitely.
That absolutely counts.
It does definitely
yes.
count. Well, I have one final question for you. I have been told by many people it is the hardest question I ask, so I do apologize. I would love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time. Just something you've read recently that, like, you want to tell everyone about.
Oh, wow. I love the way you ask, what is your favorite book now? Because that does change.
Yeah.
So I'm so delighted that you have made a point of saying it that way, because it's just true. I think Mary E. Pearson is one of my favorite authors, and the first book in her trilogy, Kiss of Deception, is the first book. And it's been a few years since I've read it now, but I do keep going back to it as one of my all-time favorites of right now. And I don't know if you've read those books. I don't want to do any spoilers.
I haven't read it. I love getting new books,
though. I'm not
going to
say anything else, but there is just something, there's this twisty little thing that she does about a quarter of the way through the book that just blows your mind.
Oh, and I love had that. Me
flipping back through the pages because I was sure I had read something wrong. And that's how mind-blowing it was. And so that's a moment, a readerly moment that I'm still living in. So I think she would have to wear the crown right now for that. Though I also, a more recent read of mine was Leigh Bardugo's Six of Crows.
So good.
And what a level of skill she has to keep all those characters straight, and their voices are so unique that you don't get them mixed up, and the story's going in all these directions and all these threads just twist back together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just so amazed at her skill. I already enjoyed her writing, so this book really was like the frosting on the Grishaverse. I just absolutely loved it. So
that was the first book I've read of hers in the Grishaverse, and I remember really? Just being like, oh my goodness, this is the most amazing thing in the world.
It really is. It's an incredible book.
So incredible. And I love what you were saying about Kiss of Deception. When authors can do those twists that you don't see coming, but also that work so well. Oh, I love those. Those are like the best moments in reading. Yes. Because, you know, when you're such an avid reader, and especially a writer too, a lot of times you can see it coming, or, you know, you have an idea, a suspicion. So when somebody does like catch you off guard, it's nice. Yes.
And then you wish that you could read it for the first time. Yes. Over again, to have that experience again, you know.
Yep.
Just because it's just so amazing to be so blindsided like that. So
good. Well, thank you for sharing those favorite books right now. Jillian, thank you so much for chatting with me today, telling us all about your long journey through publishing and your sophomore novel, The Stolen Kingdom.
Thank you so much, Rose. I have really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please make sure to rate and review wherever you are listening to it. Make sure you are subscribed so you never miss an episode. And next month, I can't believe it's almost April, just another slew of great interviews for you. So I'm so excited for what's coming next.